Hello everybody, this is BitNote. This is David Collins and we'll be talking about video games and playing music from the games. Hope you enjoy. Alright, I'll be starting off by talking about what I said I'd talk about last week. So here's a tune from a bit of an indie adventure game and hope you like it. And that, my friends, was from the game Trilby's Notes, developed by Ben Yahtzee Crosshaw, and the actual music was by Mark Lovegrove, who's actually made a lot of music for various adventure game studio games. Now, some of you, this is actually kind of interesting, actually. Some of you might not know what AGS games are. Well, I think I've covered a bit about the history of point-and-click adventure games recently in the last show, but essentially they were pretty popular, especially in the early 90s, and essentially you'd be able to see your character on a screen, you could click around, and the great power of it was that you could interact with the various things that are going on and start conversations and pick up items and use them in interesting ways. So it was really good for both narrative stuff and finding fun ways of interacting with your environment, and what I loved most about them was just the experience. I mean, in most games, you're extremely limited. A lot of first-person shooters, you can pretty much just shoot the scenery, and if you're lucky, you'll have one generic interact thing for like flipping switches or getting one line of dialogue out of characters that happen to be with you. But with adventure games, they gave you a whole different lot of ways of interacting with the environment. I mean, you could do all these sorts of fun things, and you know, problem solving, and you know, just it felt more like it was about you being there rather than you just being expected to perform a bunch of actions in the circumstances. Now, as I said before, towards the end of the 90s, adventure games weren't as popular. And then in the around to the noughties, there were still a couple of European studios making adventure games, but a lot of people wanted to say, oh no, let's make our own games. So among all this, there were a couple of tools out there for people, you know, like kids or... Not even just kids, just you know, people who love adventure games and were like, you know, growing older now and wanted to make their own. They wanted to make their own adventure games. So there were a couple of tools, and one of the most popular tools was called the Adventure Game Studio. Now, this is basically an entire program which the idea is you can create your entire adventure game in this studio without actually even needing to use programming, although if you wanted to use programming, you could. It's still available online. You can still make games in it, of course. It's been going on for a couple of years now, developed by one single guy called Chris Brown. It was developed by Chris Jones. And it's basically been one guy developing it this whole time, making making it evolve new features over time. And it's led to a heck of a lot of adventure games. I mean, like a really big swath of them. And the person I just talked about there has actually made a music for a lot of these sort of games. And one sort of series of games he made music for involved Ben Jordan, Paranormal Investigator. And I haven't actually played that series of games yet, but it kind of took my interest because when I was looking up this sort of stuff, because apparently it's a series of adventure games, and they're actually even shot one or two movies based on it. And I think they've got another one that's actually going to be shot in Ireland. So pretty cool that. But the music I just took from was from... Trilby's notes, and this is part of what's called the Chozo Mythos Quadrilogy. Now, technically, quadrilogy is a bunk word because you're mixing Greek and Latin, but listen, who cares about that stuff? I kind of do, but the point is, I'm sure most of you don't. The point is, the Chozo Mythos Trilogy, which started with 5 Days a Stranger, and ended with 6 Days of Sacrifice. Yes, there's kind of a bit of a naming convention that Trilby's notes kind of bucks the trend. Essentially, the first one starts off with you're a cat burglar, you want to burgle this house. Pretty simple motivation. You go into the house, you can't find anything immediately valuable, you try to leave, and you find out the window won't open. And then things get a little creepy when you come up with meet a couple of other people that also can't leave the house. So you're kind of getting concerned, you're walking around trying to find people. Then you suddenly start noticing that one of the people is found dead at the bottom of a swimming pool after you drain it. And that starts getting creepy, and then there are creepy nightmares, and you start realizing that the place is haunted, and then you're not quite sure what's going to happen next, and then you have to start going around finding clues, picking up pieces of paper, reading about the house's history, trying to find out what's going on. You cut down a tree at one stage, you swing through around, and then just suddenly, as you're finally getting things together, you start getting haunted by this guy who wears a welder's mask and carries around a big machete knife. And yeah, it's actually pretty good at getting you genuine scares out of you at few stages, and that's really impressive, especially given the game itself. I mean, even professional students are having a hard time getting the scares in. I really liked it. It was really atmospheric. I liked how it resolved, and it was just a really, really good, really, really good adventure game. The guy who made that game then went on and made 3 other games that followed up for it, and they're all good in their own respect, actually. By the way, I would be playing music from 5 Days a Stranger, but it turned out he got all the music from that game from a thing called RPG Maker, which is like AGS Studio was to help people make adventure games. RPG Maker was to help people make RPGs, but that's a side issue. The point is, I wanted to actually get some, you know, original music and from someone who'd actually made it, and so that's why I took it from Trilby's notes. But the 3 games that follow it are kind of good. It sometimes the story, you see, I like 5 Days a Stranger because it seemed complete, and it seemed like some of the other games it kept getting adding on to it and then saying, wait, there's more to it than it seems. So it's kind of interesting how we sort of extended the mythology of the whole game, but also kind of bit of a pity that it's like, you know, the game was nice in of itself, and I suppose you like the mythology and where it goes, but, you know, you're just wondering, you know, is a bit of this too much or abstract? With Trilby's notes is actually kind of interesting. For a start, it took a bit of a different approach. Instead of just point and click, you're actually able to walk the character around and type in commands, which is kind of which is basically how a lot of a certain brand of adventure games were done back then. I mean, you see, of course, the original adventure games were just text adventures where you typed in absolutely every single command. But then there was kind of a hybrid where you could move your character around with arrow keys and then type in the commands. I remember there was a series of games called Hugo, which I was very happy to find you can actually buy online like today. You know, it didn't just completely disappear. Apparently, the developers of that game went on to make jigsaw puzzle games, has a nice site for selling those jigsaw puzzle games, and also decided, hey, what the hell, let's throw on these adventure games from Hugo from several years back. But the point is, Trilby's Notes kind of takes on that approach, and while it's frustrating for the most part, there are a couple of really nice puzzles which you solve by typing in just the right command, because, you know, even though like clicking on a verb, you know, like push, pull, pick up, speak to, and then clicking on an item, you know, that sort of thing is fine, but sometimes you always want just that little more power. But the problem is, the more power you give the user in order to decide what to do next, you're kind of also limiting their options and making vast assumptions about what they want to do. But anyway, So Chubby's notes takes on a bit of a different thing. We've still got the cat burglar from the first game, but he's made a rather unpleasant discovery and ends up going to this hotel and in some remote region, and then trying to get more information both about what's going on and some of the background that and things that he discovered in the first game. And it definitely goes quite a horrific twist. Some sort of gruesome stuff in there, actually. But I don't know. Like I said, it's really impressive how how that it's all conveyed. Because, I mean, it looks very retro, actually. I mean, it looks very pixelated, very low resolution, all of the text. But it really adds to the aesthetic, and he definitely uses a lot with it. The guy, just to wrap this up, because, frankly, talking about adventure games takes a bit of time. But the guy who developed all this, he's actually gone on to other things now, and it's not just developing games. You see, the guy who developed this was called Ben Yatsi Crosso, and he created these set of he just created this really basic, fun sort of animation that parodied this video game called The Darkness. And then that was well received. You know, it's these things happen in the internet. Gamers pass them on to other gamers. There's a strong gamer community on the internet. So if there's something really cool and fun and gaming related, and it's actually good and better than a lot of the other good and fun, cool gaming stuff, it tends to shoot around like wildfire and pop up in all the gaming community centers. But people liked it. So then he made another video, this time dealing with Fable, and people really liked that too. And then he ended up getting a paying gig from The Escapist to actually produce these on a weekly basis. Just basically 5-minute animations, pretty basic animations, but that basically parodied or made, well, not really parodied, but basically reviewed in a snarky, humorous, slightly absurd and surreal way with a lot of cussing and swearing way of whatever game was popular or maybe not so popular around that time. And that's what he's been doing since. So he's being paid to play video games and then just make animations talking about video games. You can see why many people envy him. Yeah. Anyway, so let's move on to the next thing. This is from a slight... Oh, by the way, that series is called Zero Punctuation if you want to look it up. Thank you. Let's move on to another tune. I think a couple of you might be more familiar with it since it's from a fairly popular set of games. Let's see if you can guess it first beforehand. So, that was the battle music from Pokemon Yellow, well, also from Pokemon Red and Blue, because it kind of complained the video game tradition of just making a couple of games that are slightly similar and basically encouraging people to buy them all. As you know, Pokemon pretty much needs no introduction, developed by Game Freak, and came a huge breakout success for Game Freak and Nintendo themselves throughout the end of the just at the tail end of the 90s and well into the noughties. It's had a Pokemon Yellow was actually released after the Pokemon cartoon series had, and was modified in some ways to be just like the cartoon series. So that's what you get with tie-ins. The music there was composed by Junichi Masuda, And as a matter of fact, he's not just a composer at Game Freak, but he's also done some work on helping the character designs. And even in made, and he grew after Pokemon Yellow. He got a little more sway in how the games were developed. And in fact, one region of the one of the Pokemon games is actually modeled after a childhood place where he used to collect bugs in. So it's kind of nice. I like it when people put things of themselves into the game. Pokemon pretty much needs no introduction. You basically the classic game is that you go around, you've got a bunch of little animals, and then you find more animals, and you get your animals to attack their animals, and hopefully you defeat the animals, then you capture the animals, so you get more animals to, you know, it's all just about, and so the idea is you catch all 151 Pokemon and stuff. I don't know, I feel a little bad playing this song, because I was never really hugely into Pokemon. I bought Pokemon Yellow and thought it'd be fun and everything, and, you know, it kind of was, but I don't know, it's like, you know, why do we have to like capture 151 Pokemon? I mean, it's, and you know, so many of them have different things, there's so much to learn, and it's a fun game. I just never got into it. Yeah, so great. I chose that. What'll we talk about for the next few minutes about this game? I don't know. Will I just talk about my favorite episodes from the animation series, or okay, look, lesson learned, try to play games you know. In all fairness, though, I did actually have a nice time playing Pokemon Yellow. It's actually funny, at one stage I got Magikarp, and I remembered from the TV series that, wait a sec, Magikarp seems like a completely useless Pokemon, but if he evolves into the super duper powered Pokemon. So I kept trying to keep him alive and try to give him at every single battle and like trying to give him all these special abilities. And you see, the fun thing about Magikarp is that he actually can't attack. His only attack is called Splash, and what that does is he splashes, and it doesn't injure anything. So I kept trying to figure out, okay, how do I make something that doesn't have an offensive attack gain experience from battle so it can evolve into my super Pokemon? And so what I ended up doing was putting him on the field, and then, you know, splash me once or twice, then take him off the field, and then replace him with another Pokemon that would actually attack and beat the other Pokemon, and then hopefully the fight would end, the experience would be distributed evenly among all the Pokemon who'd participated in that battle. And of course, yeah, I was just kind of hugging the system. And then, of course, I managed to find some mods that would give him a defensive thing. But, I mean, that's always one of the weirdest things with a lot of these role-playing games, for instance. They say that the idea is that when you defeat something, you get an arbitrary amount of experience points. And with enough points, you break this new level. And when you break this new level, you go on to, you gain new abilities or new powers or new strength. You basically level up your character so it comes stronger and stronger. And all its attributes like attack and defenses increase with each level you go up. But whenever you've got more than one person attacking, you know, you're kind of wondering, okay, how the heck are these points actually distributed? Because if you've got one person on the side and they don't do anything, and the other person goes in and does all the work, suddenly the experience is distributed evenly. I mean, you know, it's kind of, okay, so apparently in this universe, experience gets distributed between parties that can't, even if you don't actually do anything. So video games say that you don't have to do anything to gain experience, which is, yeah, okay, we'll put it with the moral things. But the point is, Magikarp never freaking evolved. I can never get it to evolve. I spent a huge amount of time, and that's kind of one of the reasons I was kind of turned off Pokemon. Okay, now for our next song. What I'll be playing next is actually a song from a game called Hotel Dusk, Room 215, that was released for the Nintendo DS and developed by Sing. Hotel Dusk is basically a fun game. Every so often you get the feeling that, you know, the developers are actually trying to give something more in the game. They want the games to actually be above just the normal stuff. And this is one of the games that has that. You're basically a guy called Kyle, and you're a cop, and it's 1979, and you find yourself in a hotel in just outside of California in the desert. Your mission is you're basically trying to find out about your partner. You see, you had a partner because apparently 70s cops always have partners, and in fact, cops in pretty much every single fiction have partners. Maybe they might even have partners in real life. I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that, you know, you've been betrayed by your partner. You're kind of bummed about it. And one of the interesting things about Kyle is he's not so much wanting to get revenge or track him down or anything. He just wants to know why. You know, why did his partner betray him? It's like, Kyle comes off as a really interesting character, and I suppose that's one of the many good things about the game. A lot of the characters do. But he's a guy that's got some stuff going on, and he's kind of wants to keep to himself, but he tends up helping other people. And overall, he's not vengeful or distracted. He's just trying to look for his own solace, trying to find the answer to his own questions. And answer to your own, that's basically the whole theme for the game, really. Because when you're in that hotel, when you're trying to figure out what'll happen, pretty much every single character in the game has their own agenda, their own plot line, their own things that are going for them. And somehow you just end up, as you play the game, getting involved in pretty much every character's drama at a level of storytelling. In fact, you know, whereas other games might have a level end with, you know, a great big boss that you have to fight, these levels tend to end with you trying to learn something more about the people who you're sharing a hotel with, and where other things might have a level that's set in different themes. This game has each level set between a given time period in the game because, well, the game doesn't take place in real time, unlike one or two other games, but the game takes place over the course of you staying one night in the hotel. And, I mean, that's... I always like that, no matter in movies or anything. When you movies, books, anything, if it ever takes place over the set period of time, you just know it's going to be good because the writers really spent energy trying to make sure each moment works and the character interaction is great. And so, basically, you're in the hotel, you're trying to figure out clues, and there's this myth, basically, about this, you find out, about one room in that hotel called Room 215, and apparently, whoever stays in that room, their wishes come true. And Kyle ends up staying in that room, and does his wish come true? Well, you'll have to buy the game to find out. It's had a really nice style to it there. There was some basic 3D, just like the Nintendo DS was always capable of. But also, it also just used a lot of hand-drawn stuff, often with a sort of a sketchy style with rotoscoping and everything. And I just really liked it. I mean, in a lot of ways, it's just... It really felt, they were just nice characters, and they came across really well, and you got to talk with them and try to figure out what everyone's game was. And it's also pretty much the only video game I am ever familiar with where at one point in the video game, a character asks you to retrieve a label from a bottle of wine so that they are able to actually order that wine again in the future. I know that might sound like a really, really mundane thing, but that's kind of the point. I mean... In real life, people do that. They get the label from a bottle of wine, yet video games are meant to operate on this cool level outside of reality. I just like it when a game takes something, or even just a movie or anything, just takes something so, to some people's lives, mundane or simple or straightforward or something that happens in real life, and then just integrates it into the game, like a gameplay. It shows that people are actually trying to give a view of the world as they see it and not just trying to create some fantasy world on top of it that operates in its own rules, but then these old rooms turn out to be based on the rules that whatever person has come up with, and because they're invented, they never seem to be realistic or whatever. But it's just, I just kind of like it. I'm kind of baffling on about it. I'm going to play actually a few tracks from this game. It was such as Violet Sky and the main theme tune. It was all composed by Satoshi Okubo, and I hope you'll just really enjoy these tunes. So this has been David Collins with BitNote. I hope you enjoyed listening, and I'm just leaving you with some great tracks from Hotel Dusk. Thank you for listening.
Yeah.